Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right, we're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret, all your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon is easy. All you have to do is go to esopodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 137 of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to talk Adventures of the Super Sons number 7, Batman number 64, Green Arrow number 49, Justice League number 17, The Green Lantern number 4, Young Justice number 2, Heroes in Crisis number 5, Arrow season 7 episode 13, The Star City Slayer, Black Lightning season 2 episode 13, The Book of Secrets chapter 3, Pillar of Fire, Flash Season 5, Episode 14, Cause and Excess, and Doom Patrol, Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. McFarlane Toys and DC have partnered to produce a line of action figures based on DC Comics characters. The partnership will produce a line of 6 to 12-inch action figures, and the license agreement is reportedly a 3-year contract, and no specific planned characters or collectibles for this line have been reported yet.
I mean, it's news that for me personally doesn't really mean a whole lot, but I know there's a lot of people that are very excited by that news.
Yeah, I'm not much into collecting toys either, but I know there'll be a lot of people excited for McFarlane to be producing some DC stuff. So
my understanding is that they're pretty good, like they're a pretty top-notch company, but I honestly have no experience in that area, so I don't really know. I can't really comment too much.
Now I have to say I do have a Spawn action figure that I got, it's probably been 20 years that I have signed by the real Al Simmons, who the character was based off of. So that's probably the only McFarlane toy action figure I have. All right, coming up next for DC News, Batman vs. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie was announced. And at this time, it doesn't have an official release date, but it's supposed to be arriving on 4K, Blu-ray, and HD digital sometime this spring.
I have not read the comic series for that, but I'm honestly not surprised that they're doing this. It seems like a logical next step, especially considering how popular the series sold, at least from what I understand how it sold.
Yes, I've not read it either, but a friend of ours, Brandon, has read it, and he raves about it. So, of course, I'm sure you're not too surprised by that.
No, not at all.
All right, and in other DC news, DC will be spotlighting their villains in a year-long initiative beginning this May with the Year of the Villain. The event will kick off May 1st with a 25-cent one-shot anthology with stories tying into upcoming Batman, Justice League, and Superman titles, including a City of Bane story arc in Tom King's Batman and a continuation of the Batman Who Laughs limited series into a new title launching this summer. I was very excited to hear about the City of Bane from Tom King.
Yeah, I agree. This is pretty cool. I'm excited for it. They have done this somewhat recently. I would say in the last maybe 5 to 6 years, when they did a bunch of one villain one shots during the New 52 era. Some of them were pretty good. I mean, you know, not all of them were winners, but a lot of them were pretty cool. So it'll be cool to see what they do with this too.
Yeah. All right, up next for DC News, Supergirl's Melissa Bonnest gets engaged to co-star Chris Wood, who's Mon-El. Kind of excited to hear that, and good for them.
Yeah, that is cool. I mean, this was honestly, I feel like we maybe mentioned this when he exited the show. This is one of the reasons I was a little bit surprised when Mon-El left the show last season. I was like, I know those two are dating, which doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I'm surprised that you would think that would be motivation for him to stay on the show, because then they would be, you know, in living in the same area.
Yeah, but you know, it may not have been his decision either.
No, I know. No, I know. I understand. And there are a lot of other arguments and all that too. But yeah, that was, I'm not shocked by this news because I knew that they were dating, but good for them.
Yeah, that's cool. All right. And moving on to other DC news, Arrow's Echo Kellum exits after 3.5 seasons as Curtis, AKA Mr. Terrific. That's kind of a bummer, but not surprising. I mean, his character hasn't been doing a whole lot on the show.
Yeah, I am bummed to see him go because it felt like they never fully got him to Mr. Terrific. I know, like, technically they did, but he always felt like he was stuck in second gear as a hero. I don't know about you.
I agree with you on that. You know what they should do? I think we should get a Terrifics television show.
They would have to, he would have to seriously grow, though, as a hero for that to work. But yes, I would not complain about that. on the other hand, I enjoyed him, so I am bummed that he's leaving. However, I do think it's a good thing overall just to slim the cast down. I think it really helps the show, the less characters there are that they need to focus on. I think the better. I think it's hard to, many people would disagree that the show got pretty bloated in terms of cast at one point. So trimming down on that, willingly or not, I think helps the show.
Yeah. They would have to do less putting people on hiatus like they do sometimes for an episode or so.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You don't have to, you know, neglect a character or do anything if you only have like just the right number of characters. And that's the thing with the show. They don't really, seven seasons, going to be 8 seasons in. You don't need to add more characters at that point. You know what I mean? Like, they've built their world.
Yeah. All right, coming up in other DC news, Carlos Valdez, who plays Cisco on The Flash, is reportedly leaving the series after season 5. I was very bummed to hear that.
Yeah, I'm not surprised given what we were seeing on the show. But man, not a character I want to see leave the show.
Nope, definitely not. So I'm just bummed about that. And I guess it made sense why his character was doing some of the weird stuff he was doing this season.
It makes sense what they're doing as writers. It still doesn't make sense. It's still such an about face for the character, though.
It is.
This dude really loved being Vibe and loved having superpowers. And then all of a sudden now he's, I don't know. The only thing I can hope with this is that it gives Ralph more time to be a bigger character.
Yeah. Now, with Cisco leaving, do you think they'll bring back the tech version of Wells to kind of fill his spot?
No, because he's not smart enough anymore. You're talking about Harry?
Yeah.
He can't fill that void.
Well, we can always get a different version of Wells who's smart.
That's true. Yes. Yes, so. I agree with you. I'm just saying it won't be Harry. I think Harry's done.
He's done, okay.
We might see him, you know, like in a random episode where maybe Jesse Quick comes back and so they bring Harry back too, but I don't think he'll ever be a important figure again.
Okay. All right, and finally for DC News, and watching these on the app, I kind of missed it, but when I looked them up this week, though, to make sure, because a new Flash was going on hiatus. Arrow and Black Lightning are on hiatus until Monday, March 4th, and then Flash is on hiatus until Tuesday, March 5th. Kind of bummed about that. And I was kind of wondering why the heck they're going on hiatus for a few weeks.
This happens every year, though.
I know, but you'd think they...
I'm not happy about it either, but this happens every year.
Yeah, that's true. What's funny is they're going on a hiatus. Supergirl's coming back next week. So at least we'll still have Supergirl and Doom Patrol to talk about next week.
Yeah.
All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmos Show and the PCC Multiverse.
That is by far my favorite because it's also character-driven and the stakes are high and there's much more of a mystery and intrigue to it.
A game like Wolfenstein, which people are saying are one of the most socially important video games of the past 10 years.
Catch our shows on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on over 30 more podcast outlets, including our friends right here at the ESO Network.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Adventures of the Super Sons number 7. Not really a lot happens in this issue. We do learn what happens to the boys once they reach the prison world. Superboy is put in solitary confinement to drain his powers. And then we see Robin spend almost the whole issue looking for John. But along the way, we meet a lot of characters that Rex Luthor has been recruiting to his gang there on the prison world.
One of my questions was, where was Lex getting all the costumes?
That's a good question.
Where were they coming from? That wasn't that, it really didn't affect my reading at all, but I kept thinking that though. I was like, wait, we're in a prison. Like, where is he getting these from? The one thing that I thought was odd was that if it's not the very first page, it's one of the first pages, and it continues throughout the whole thing. You slowly realize it's the tiny little bit of light that Joker got into John's cell hitting John. You see it periodically throughout the issue. At the very end, he busts out. And it was played like this sort of inspirational, mysterious thing that's going on. And it was like, it's not been happening long enough for it to mean anything. Like, he gets thrown into that cell this issue. And then he breaks out this issue. So it was weird. When he busts out and it was like this big thing, like, oh, he finally got the sunlight and now John's back. I was like, but I mean, I saw him in action this issue. Like, it was odd. It was like this was meant to take place over a longer stretch and it didn't. It was like two or three comics worth packed into one, and the pace was just so overly fast, in my opinion, that none of it really meant a whole lot to me.
I see where you're coming from with that. I mean, it didn't really feel like he was in that cell for that long to, you know, getting that little bit of sunlight gave him a little boost or something, you know what I mean? I never thought he was out of juice.
Well, no, like, I mean, I got the sunlight, the actual act of it totally made sense. It was the way it was written where they like spaced it throughout that the image, the like 9-panel thing of him getting light is constant throughout the comic. And it just seemed like it was making it more important than it was, if that makes any sense. Like I believe that he needed that sunlight to break out. That plot wise made sense. It was just, so as a reader, it felt like I was supposed to care more than I did. Like I'm happy he's out. But I didn't really feel the stakes because he wasn't really in that long. And we never actually, technically we see him in there, but you don't really realize you're seeing him in there right away.
I don't know. I didn't pay that much attention to that part of the story, really. I was more focused on what was going on with Robin and him encountering all the different villains.
Which was fun. Don't get me wrong. Like there was still some fun stuff in it, but it just felt, like, even the Robin thing, it felt like there was more to play around with. That was the thing. Given some of the earlier comics in this series that we've read, it felt like this could have been expanded. And we could have lost some of the stuff that we did in some of the previous issues. like Robin living in this weird prison world and going around and hunting for John and encountering these different kid villains is interesting. It is legitimately interesting, and there were some cool scenes in it, and it never really got a take off.
Yeah.
It was just done. That was what I'm saying. Like, it just felt everything about it was cool. Like, I like the idea of this sunlight slowly finding John. I like that idea. I like the idea of Robin slowly fighting his way through this entire prison world. All that was cool, but it was so fast. I didn't feel like I could appreciate it at all.
Yeah, I understand that. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman number 64. What a disappointing issue of Batman. I was all excited to read it, and only a few pages in, I was like, what the hell is up with this dialogue? And then I went back to the credits, and I was like, F me. Williamson is writing the issue.
Oh, we had the same reaction. I'm so glad that you're the one that said that. After I saw it was him, I remembered that this was supposed to be happening, but I had definitely forgotten. And then I was reading the issue, and I was like, wait, what? Oh, no. And I'm particularly I think we'd agree this issue wasn't that good. But
no.
What particularly bums me out is that it's on a storyline I was really looking forward to reading I didn't know this was what Williamson's story was going to be. But I knew at some point, based on what King was setting up, at some point we were going to get the return of Gotham Girl. We were going to get that story. And I had been so looking forward to the return of her and seeing what happens with that. And they gave it to the worst. Oh, why? That was my reaction. I was like, oh, no. Not Gotham Girl. Like, at least make it some garbage throwaway story, not one of the major parts of Bane's plan.
I know. I didn't pay any attention. I figured it was Tom King's story. I started writing it. I was like, what is going on with this dialogue? Because it was all clunky and stuff. And I went back to the credits, and I was like, son of a...
I also personally was not impressed with the art. I thought I was a little... not everybody's going to agree with this, but for me personally, I was put off on... I think it's the first page. There's this big spread of Wonder Woman, all sexy and covered in blood. And you can tell that the artist clearly spent an absurd amount of time drawing her. And then the rest of the comic looks rushed and not that good. So it's like, could you have spent maybe, I don't know, an hour less time focusing all of your fantasies on drawing Wonder Woman and maybe drawing the rest of the comic decently? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
I agree
with you. 23 other pages in the comic.
I agree with you on the artwork. I remember towards the back of the issue, Gotham Girl was drawn terrible.
It was a double whammy because I was like, if you're going to take King off, and I understand that you guys said that you were doing this, but if you're going to take him off for a couple issues for this, at least could we please put somebody who can draw on the comic? Like, come on. Batman is your title. It is the DC title. I understand, you know, he's not the only DC superhero, but in terms of sales, this is it. This is the flagship title for DC. What are you thinking? I'm just saying, what are you thinking as an editorial team doing this? That was my big reaction from this comic. Like, I don't even really want to talk about the plot just because I'm so baffled as a just company and DC, your highest selling title, why you would put a creative duo like this on it.
And the story didn't even make any sense. Why is Gotham Girl attacking the Flash Museum?
Yeah, that didn't even... It didn't make sense at the end. Like, I got that somebody was clearly attacking all these places, and it was like, okay. And then at the end, she was doing it to help Gotham come back. But how? Is it she's just doing what Bane tells her to do? While Bane is the one bringing him back? Because maybe I was reading it wrong, but the implication I got seemed to be that whatever she was doing was to directly help Gotham, not that she was basically Bane's lackey while Bane fixed the problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then attacking the Flash Museum doesn't make any sense, because what is she going to get from there?
Yeah, I didn't get that either. I just figured it was poor writing from Williamson.
Well, yes, it was. It was. But in what way is it poor writing? Is it just like illogical, or is there something like incomprehensible? You know what I mean? Like, are we just not getting something, or is it just dumb?
Yeah. Is it even possible for Gotham to come back? He's been dead for quite a while.
And they're pumping him full of the Venom serum.
Is that what they were pumping him full of?
I mean, it's not explicit, but that seemed to be the implication to me. Seemed to be that they were pumping him full of Venom, which we already have Bane. That's my least favorite aspect of Bane is the Venom serum. So, like, I don't need. It almost seems like they're going to turn Gotham into the dumb version of Bane that some people only know of. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
Yeah, we don't need that.
We don't. But that's what it kind of feels like. That's what they're going for. I don't.
All right.
Not enjoy this comic, and I was especially displeased because, like you, I was like, "Sweet Batman, another Tom King comic. Let's do this." And then I was like, "Oh no."
All right. Well, we still have to cover it, so we'll be talking about it. But don't expect us to be excited about it. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Green Arrow number 49. So we see Green Arrow battle Vertigo, and when Green Arrow actually reveals to Vertigo that Roy is dead, it's like the comic hit pause, and they had a momentary truce.
Actually, I thought that was kind of interesting. I'm not gonna lie. It was definitely not something you'd expect from that comic, especially with all the buildup. But I kind of liked it. I'm not gonna lie. It was. It felt like it almost that fact in a weird way kind of snapped Vertigo out of it, or he was like, "Oh wow, I don't need to be doing this." I don't know. There was something about it I kind of liked it. The thing that I wasn't a huge fan of, and I think I talked about it in the last comic, was the way the artist chose to lay out and draw the comic. It's not bad artwork, but we keep being told that the city's all crazy and it's like Inception style dimensions where everything's just bent and weird, but we never really, really get to see it. We only get like brief little glimpses way, like with the scene is, so, the panel is small, and it's focusing on Oliver or Vertigo or Black Canary or whoever. And deep in the background, you can kind of see that things are weird, but they never. It's just odd to me. You would think as an artist that they would just go ham with that, and just we would get to really see all these crazy, weird city design. And instead, we never really see it. We keep getting told that it's like that, but it was hard at a certain point for me to get into the action where, like, Canary at one point is yelling at Oliver not to jump or not to do something because it's dangerous, but I believed it because she was saying it, but I couldn't see what the danger was because I couldn't, like, from my perspective, he wasn't jumping into anything. I couldn't see anything. Yeah. I don't know if you felt that way, but when I was reading, I was like, I can't really tell what's going on. I know we're not supposed to have a normal background, but, like, I can't really see anything. It's just kind of like characters in front of a blurry nothingness.
Yeah, I agree with it. That could have been illustrated a lot better.
Well, especially given that was the whole point, right? The whole attack, especially it comes down to Oliver finally kind of solves it and realizes it's all in their head. And so it's like, but this a vision, a story that is obviously all comics are focused on visuals, but like this is so based on visuals. They are literally being affected by what they are seeing, and it's a comic and we can't see that. Like that goes against everything that a comic is supposed to do.
So yeah, I agree with it. That could have been better drawn. Now we get to the end of the issue, and apparently Black Canary is a government agent because she gets orders to destroy Green Arrow. We know coming up next issue, number 50 is supposed to be the last one, so I guess it'll be interesting to see what happens.
It definitely feels tacked on. I was a little bit surprised when Vertigo lost this issue because I was like, well, that doesn't make sense. Why wouldn't he just lose an issue 50? And then I remembered that they were supposed to be doing something different. It feels very tacked on. I can't imagine issue 50 is going to be particularly satisfying.
Yeah, and I have a feeling it's going to feel rushed too.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I just can't see them telling a satisfying conclusion to their run in a one issue story. I don't know. It's an odd way to end the series, I have to say.
Let's cross our fingers.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Justice League number 17. Man, what a great story. The good, the bad, and the dragons. So we get a new origin for both Lex Luthor and the Martian Manhunter. We find out that years ago, John was a captain of Lionel Luthor, and he was doing experiments trying to mix the Martian DNA with human DNA.
This was very interesting. I really liked this issue. I liked the fact that Lex and Martian Manhunter have this past together that neither of them remembers. Or at least now they do, but before they didn't remember this. That these two have been going at each other in theory for years.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you find out that they actually knew each other as kids. That's kind of, I don't know, it's really cool.
And we're friends.
Yeah.
This is the thing I found weird. So Lex has telepathy and can fly?
It seemed to be stuff his suit was providing.
Oh, it was stuff his suit was providing.
His suit was blocking the telepathy from John and also Starro or Jaro.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking when they were kids.
Oh.
Because Lex was talking to him telepathically. And that there was this one scene where they are flying together.
But that was, they were talking telepathically because Lex didn't take the medicine that blocked Martian Manhunter from his mind.
Okay.
So he's not, he is speaking to Jean through his mind, but it's Jean that's the one initiating it.
Okay, gotcha. That makes sense. That kind of confused me on that.
And then I'm pretty sure the flying was in their mind.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I don't think John ever actually left that cage.
Oh, I guess that would make sense. They did it mentally, but not actually physically.
Yeah, I can't see any situation where the two of them would have gone out on adventures together, but then John is still trapped in a cage at the end. That wouldn't make any sense.
It was a great story, though. And I'm glad they didn't try to really, I'm glad the story just focused on them the whole issue and not try to tell any other part of the Justice League story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Green Lantern number 4. I have to say, I really like this issue, Cletus. You know, I didn't care for the issue before that much, but I thought this one was really good. And I have to say, I knew that the cowboy was Hal the whole time. I wasn't surprised by that reveal.
I really liked that framing device, though. I liked the idea of them both telling stories to each other.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was a very good issue. I have to say, I think it's probably my favorite of the run so far.
I have to agree with you. I found the Sun Eaters interesting, and I really liked how Hal saved Taggart from the Sun Eaters.
Yeah.
I thought that was a cool scene. And then they introduced that new character, Lantern Hyperia number 3, which is some sort of intelligent computer star, because it kind of reminded me of Mogo, but it was different.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Really, really good. And it's interesting that Hal was stripped of his title. We see that he gets in trouble for murdering Volgar Zo from the previous issue. We see that John Stewart, Simon Baz, and Jessica Cruz are put in charge of Earth. And Hal's supposed to be taken back to his home world, but we don't really, it looks like he's undercover. So was that all a ploy?
The comic, I think, wants you to think that he is serious about defecting from the Green Lanterns.
Well, I don't think he is, but I don't think
he is either.
I just think he's undercover, but
I don't know. I think he probably, I mean, yes, he is undercover, but I don't know that he's sanctioned undercover, if that makes sense. I think he's going off on his own.
Do you think he did all this on purpose then?
No, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, I wouldn't go that. I would think he got put on. I don't think he got in trouble with the Guardians on purpose, no.
Okay.
No, Hal Jordan's not a chess player, you know.
That is true. He's not John Stewart.
No.
But very, very good issue. I'm excited about reading the next one.
Yeah, I agree. I've definitely enjoyed this series, but this one was, I think, my favorite that we've gotten so far. I'm looking forward to more. It's been super weird and everything I kind of wanted out of a Grant Morrison Green Lantern run so far.
All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Young Justice number 2. And I got to tell you, Cletus, you were right. I'm more invested in this comic now that I've read issue 2. I thought it was a lot better than issue 1. It's kind of fun. I mean, it's geared for our younger audience, but it doesn't take itself too seriously. I found the Cassie and Zeus interaction interesting, and I kind of liked how this issue focused on Cassie.
I enjoyed this one a little bit more, too, because it was just much more clear what was going on.
Yeah. One of the things I'm interested in finding out is if the Robin is the Tim Drake Robin, because they haven't confirmed it yet, but I'm guessing it is. He doesn't act like Damian.
Pretty sure it's Tim. I'm thinking they said it was Tim last issue, but I don't remember.
I don't remember sure. either. I didn't think they did, but I could be wrong.
I'm like 99% sure it's Tim.
So, you know, so giving this a... You were right in giving this another chance, so I am excited to see what goes on in issue number 3.
I am usually right, so that's fair. Yeah,
okay. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week, Heroes in Crisis number 5, which we forgot to do last week. So, I love Booster Gold and Blue Beetle deciding to team back up, and I like that Booster's like, yeah, let's go knock the Flash out and steal his clues. Because Booster had tried that already once and failed, and him and Ted decided to do it again because it's the dumbest move that the other heroes wouldn't expect.
I know. It was perfect. I was like, yes, this is exactly the plan that the two of them would use.
And Booster was all excited when it actually worked. But Booster ended up doing this weird test that Barry wouldn't have thought of, which was he did a time travel test. And I'm guessing it's something that was probably done to him back in the 25th century, because it sounded like it was something the time travel police used to see if you are cheating. He ends up using it here, and they find out that Wally is 5 days older than he should be. So it sounds like there's some sort of time travel thing going on.
Yeah, that was very interesting. I was glad to see Booster. Like, I like Booster being a goof, but I also like seeing him be competent when it comes to time travel stuff. So that was cool. I really enjoyed this issue. I like that it sort of is starting to reveal some stuff. Like, you know, we had a bunch of like bombshell, bombshell, bombshell. Now we're actually starting to learn some things. The one thing that I still am a little bit confused by is the Batgirl-Harley team-up, because I still don't fully understand why it's Batgirl.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I was going to ask you, does it feel like next issue is going to be a Batgirl and Harley Quinn versus Booster Gold and Blue Beetle? And then it's going to be like a confrontation, then a team-up?
Yes. Specifically the team up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing the standoff. I'm sure they'll take a few swings. They'll talk it out. And then those are going to be the four. It's such a weird combo. Like Blue Beetle, Booster Gold, Harley. I get all of them, particularly Booster and Harley. I get those guys. And Blue Beetle teaming up with Booster makes sense. It's the Batgirl one is fine. I have no complaints, but it's the one I'm like, but why Batgirl?
Yeah, I know, that's just kind of weird, but I guess we'll find out. Tom King is writing this, so.
Yeah.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
Greetings, Starfighters. It's Sean from the Rusted Robot Podcast. Join me and the Rusty crew as we break down the latest geeky movie trailers, talk about TV, comics, toys, games, casting news, and all things nerdy. Find us on all your favorite podcast apps, the ESO Network, and at therustedrobot.podbean.com. The Rusted Robot Podcast, your source for geek since 2014.
The Rusted Robot Podcast. Think about it.
And we're back. Let's talk Arrow Season 7, Episode 13, Star City Slayer. All right, Cletus, I'm going to throw this out there. We should have seen this coming. When I was watching this episode, as soon as I saw that slab side outfit, I was like, dang it. I knew the killer was Stanley. I should have saw this coming.
Yeah, I agree. To be fair, though, there hadn't really been anything. It was just stalker notes. You know what I mean? Like, that's not really enough. And I honestly thought that Stanley was going to come back in a larger role than this. I was expecting him to be a mini arc, which I guess technically he was, if you want to count the hints at him in the previous episodes. But I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit surprised it got resolved in one episode.
Yeah, I was not expecting that to be him either. Now, I did like this episode a lot. Yes. I thought the house where Diggle, Renee, Curtis, and Diana found him in was very creepy. Stanley cutting Diana's throat was kind of gruesome. And I thought they did a good job of making the Star City Slayer threat feel real. You know?
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that. It felt appropriate where he is good enough to have a little bit of success against the team, but he's still just Stanley, right? Like, he's not going to be able to hang with them. That's why he loses within an episode. I liked it. I liked how they handled it.
I do too. And even the attack on Oliver's family, I thought that was pretty good too. I mean, we knew Oliver was going to beat him in the end, but it still felt like a threat to him.
Yeah, I agree.
We just got William back, but they end up shipping him off to his grandparents. Let me ask you a question. Do we find out about why William got kicked out of school last episode, right?
I don't think they ever actually explain it, though.
Yeah, I don't think they explained it.
No, they don't.
They explained it during this issue, I think. No, they don't. No, they didn't.
No, they don't. They try to, and he's too busy yelling at them. And then everything happens, then he leaves. They never explain it.
Okay. I guess that's why I couldn't remember. But I like that Oliver and William finally got a heart-to-heart after all the teen angst and Oliver demanding things from William. They finally get down to the core of the problem, and William wants a normal life. And he is not going to get it with, villains coming after Oliver all the time.
Yeah, I do think the writers could have done William a few favors, especially considering that we're supposed to be rooting for the adult version of him in these flash forwards. Like, could you make him a little likable in the present time? Like, it's no complaint with the actor. The actor's just playing the role that's been given to him. It just, like, I understand teenagers are, trust me, I teach. Like, I get it. Teenagers can be miserable sometimes and can be angsty, but, like, they're not. William feels like it's like a one day out of 10 that he's on that he's good on the show. So I won't miss him in that regard in terms of the younger William. One thing that's frustrating, though, is that we never get the explanation for why he got kicked out of school. They keep asking about it. And I almost wonder if he does tell them in a cut scene and they just edited it out. I don't know. Well, how do you just not answer that question?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, why we don't get an answer to that question? And the other thing was weird. He seems to have a friendship with Wild Dog's daughter, but I wish they would explore that a little more.
It felt like they did the bare minimum they needed to make the flash forwards make sense.
Yeah, I agree with you there. We really needed some more.
I agree.
All right, let's move on to Curtis. Curtis gets offered a job from the Kohler Humanitarian Institute in Washington, D.C. And, of course, Diggle and Lila try to entice Curtis to stay at Argus by making him head of the tech division, but Curtis is ready to move on. And I was kind of surprised like this. I didn't know, you know, before the news announcement, I didn't know Curtis was leaving the show. So it's kind of abrupt in this episode.
I don't know. I would agree it was sudden, but it did feel like they actually built this one up a little bit, because they had expressed his dissatisfaction with Argus, right?
Yes,
and he was only, and also that, unlike the stuff with Cisco, he really is only at Argus because that was basically his option. Like, to continue, he wanted to continue working with those people, and that was really the only thing he could do. He was not at Argus because he loved working at Argus.
That,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's true.
He's really only there because that's really his only choice. That's where he has to be. And as soon as he gets another opportunity, he doesn't like it at Argus anymore. I will have to give the writers a lot of credit. It felt very natural for him to leave for DC. Just as a character, it's like, yes, this makes sense. Beyond the fact that I know that the actor isn't going to be on the show anymore.
So, yeah, I have to agree with you. They did kind of build that up with his dissatisfaction of Argus. All right, well, let's move on to the flash forward, because in the flash forward, we finally find out who those two mysterious people were who were going to the old Arrow bunker at the end of the last episode, because I think I even asked you in our last episode of the podcast who they were. We find out the guy is Connor Hawk, who's the son of Lila and Diggle. But I was going to ask you, why is his name different?
They explained it in that Legends of Tomorrow episode. They explained it that he changed it. I don't remember. There was some reason he changed it after his dad died. There was some explanation to it. I mean, really, we know he changed it to that because they're trying to do the reference to Oliver's son, Connor Hawk, from the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember the full explanation. It's something to do with his dad's death and him wanting to become a new person, so he just changes his name.
Okay, and then we find out the woman is Mia Smoke, Oliver and Felicity's daughter. And my question for that one is, why does she have the last name Smoke and not Queen?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I don't know. I don't really have a good explanation for that one. But really, it doesn't really matter. I'm a little bit surprised that they went with Smoke and then they didn't just say Dearden, because that's really who she's supposed to be.
Okay.
Mia Dearden is one of the Speedies.
Oh, is it? Okay.
She's in the comics. She's basically what Thea is. Like, she's the female Speedy.
Okay.
Gotcha. So I'm surprised if you're going to go with the whole John Diggle's son inexplicably names himself Connor Hawk. I'm surprised they didn't just go with Felicity Smoke's daughter just calls herself Mia Dearden. You know what I mean? I'm surprised that they went with Smoke on her last name when she is clearly supposed to be Mia Dearden.
I wonder if there's some sort of story reason for that we're going to find out in the future.
Yeah, I don't know. I assume so. Right. I have to say, though, the one thing, I continue to not want this flash forward to be the true future of the show. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, I am enjoying the flash forward while still hoping that it's like a preventable timeline.
Now, I was going to ask you this. Do you feel like they're setting up Arrow the Next Generation? Because that's what it's starting to feel like to me.
I don't know. I don't know if it's just personally because it's what I want, or it just still doesn't. I still feel like there's a strong chance that these events don't actually happen. Because I just can't imagine a show that it's going to go for a minimum of 8 years, but probably at least 9 years, right? At least 9 years, and then basically just say, and then all of the main characters died. I understand that there maybe have been shows that have done that, but that's so unsatisfying.
Yeah, it is. Last thing I wanted to say before we move on is I thought Captain Singh making a guest appearance was kind of cool. I wasn't expecting that.
It was cool. I do have to say that the scene was a little cheesy because she calls him specifically to get help for a crime, and we get like a like 3 minute monologue from him on how awesome she was. And I was like, that's nice, but like, doesn't feel like how you two would actually talk on the phone.
All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Black Lightning, Season 2, Episode 13, The Book of Secrets, Chapter 3, Pillar of Fire. So, we see in this episode that Jefferson has a chance to get his principal job back. And now that he is Black Lightning again, he can't give the students the attention he needs. Did you see that going that way? Did you think he was going to become principal again, or did you think he was going to stay being the teacher?
I did. Oh, I don't know if this will make sense. I thought he would be principal when they never bothered to truly humanize the other principal. I thought this would be the episode, especially when he goes to talk to him, that all of a sudden that principal would do something to humanize himself and make him not seem so bad. And that would be the thing that turned Jefferson around and be like, oh, hey, you know what? Actually, you're not bad. But then they didn't do that. They interact, and the guy is still a dick. Now, am I wrong? Did I miss something? It didn't seem like there was at any point a scene where he's like, he redeems himself, and then Jefferson is still like, oh, yeah, no, he deserves it.
See, that's what didn't make sense. Even if Jefferson didn't want to take the position, why would he praise this principal at all? Why would he say, no, this guy's doing a terrible job. I can't, you know, take that position again, but you guys need to get somebody else in here. Why wouldn't he do that?
I have to admit, I don't understand what they're doing with the principal character, only because it feels like it were two or three episodes overdue for him to have some other dimension to his character than irredeemable dickwad. You know what I mean? Like, he's not, they've never given him anything other than like, what's the worst possible thing that this white guy could say in this situation? And he says that every time. That's how every scene with him plays out. And I don't think he's meant to be like a antagonist necessarily on the show. He's just a nuisance. And you would think that at some point they'd want to do something more with that character. I also think as an actor, you'd want to do something else with that. I don't know. That was I'm just a little confused with what they're doing with him, because if you want to make him fully antagonistic, they're not really doing that. And if you want to make him, you know, not a one-dimensional D-bag, they're not doing that either. They're just kind of in the middle, not really doing a lot of anything.
Yeah. I don't know what they have planned for that character, but they need to do something. Anissa is worried about her girlfriend Grace, and we see that she breaks into her apartment and finds a photo and some medication. Kind of doing some creepy stuff there, Anissa. We learned that her name's not Grace, isn't her real name. Her parents died long ago, and she was in the foster system. And even more weird, she had been a sex slave at some point and was taking medicine for schizophrenia. Kind of interesting what they're doing with Grace, but I don't know where that's going to lead to.
Now, I know the medicine is technically for schizophrenia, but I don't think she's actually taking it for that, though.
I don't know. That's the indication I got.
I felt like she's taking that medication because it helps her with her keeper powers.
Yeah, in check.
Yeah. I could be wrong. It could be both. It could be unrelated to that. It could be just her mental condition. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I'm still wondering. Is she gonna turn into a villain? Is she not? Is she gonna be some sort of problem that Nyssa has to take her down? Or you know what I mean?
I hope not. I'm hoping. I'm sure there'll be some minor conflict, but I still feel like she'd be on the good side overall. I'd be a little bit surprised if she turned into a major villain.
Okay.
Or even a one episode villain.
So I'm just curious about what they're planning on do with her. All right. Also in this episode, Jen decides she can't wait around to the task of finding Tobias and takes it into her own hand. Using Anissa's disguise, she roughs up some of Tobias's men trying to locate him, and then she gets herself in trouble and passes out while she's using her powers. Not good. Luckily, Anissa is able to come to her rescue. That did feel just like Jen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep. I'd agree. It was cool, the stuff that she was able to do before she overworked herself, but it also made me excited because we're like, okay, we're like one or two episodes away from getting the full roster.
Yeah, we're getting close. I'm excited about that. I'm also like the fact that, I forget the woman's name, the woman that helps her mentally is keeping an eye on her.
Yes.
So I do like that. Also in this episode, we see that Lynn is having her own problems as the ASA wants her to move the pod kids again. That can't be good, keep moving those pods around. But unfortunately, Tobias sends Cutter and his new metahuman weapon, the dude with vibration powers, to collect the pod kids. And of course, we see that Tobias is successful in getting the pods and becoming a metahuman arms dealer.
What was interesting to me was that at the very end, they seem to have killed the tech guy.
Yeah, because...
But I don't think they did.
Oh, you don't think they did? I think they did. Because they don't... Tobias doesn't need him anymore. And Cutter says...
Part of me feels like it's not actually him in that car. They didn't actually show you he was in the car.
No, they did not show you he was in
the
car.
Let's be honest. The show is not shy about killing people. But they've never, the one time it was unclear, Gambi didn't actually die, right?
Right. Okay.
So, I don't know. I don't think, that felt like it was the first step towards Tobias's downfall.
I
feel like that was his first mistake.
Do you think Todd's going to come back and be helping the good guys then?
Yeah, I do. I don't know if he'll necessarily be completely a good guy, but I think he'll be like, oh, this is how you're going to do me? And he's going to go back at Tobias.
Hmm, interesting. Great episode of Black Lightning. Now we have to wait several weeks before he's back.
Yep.
Well, same with Arrow Dew. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Flash, Season 5, Episode 14, Cause and Excess. In this episode of Flash, Barry takes the metahuman cure into the Speed Force so that the concentrated amount of tachyons can finish it. Apparently it was finished, but it wasn't completely finished. So Barry does that, and then he's kind of out of the episode. Cicada attacks while Barry is gone, and Nora tries to stop him. But every time she tries to stop him, somebody gets killed. And we find out that she has tried 52 times to stop Cicada, and she keeps failing.
I really like the... I'm a sucker. I've said this before. I'm a sucker for time loop stories. I will admit I prefer the one that Legends did last year with Zara, but this one was good.
It was.
My only complaint continues to be that yet again, they defeat Cicada, and he gets away again. That's my only bummer. The only thing right at the end of the episode, they beat him and then he flies away again. I'm like, come on.
Yes. All they had to do was, Nora just stands there. All they had to do was slap metahuman cuffs on him.
But that's every single time it's been like that. Except the one exception was Iris stabbing him and running away. That's the only time that Team Flash has gotten one up on Cicada that they couldn't capture him. And that was because it was only Iris and she needed to get out of there as soon as she could. Every other time, and at this point, you can't even count on one hand anymore the number of times they've beaten Cicada. It's the complete reverse of everything you would want from a big bad. I like Cicada as a villain, but they have overplayed his card and the way that they have, if you're going to make him the villain for the entire season, you cannot have him interact with the team this much because this is what happens. Inevitably, you have to write victories in.
Right. Now, I'm going to say a perfect example of this is Black Lightning, because Tobias is the season-long villain, but they are not interacting with him every friggin' episode.
They almost never do. Really, Tobias has been a villain for 2 seasons. Granted, there have been other villains that have come up and have been the more focused threat, but he's been there. And the reason he's worked as a villain for 2 seasons is because him and Black Lightning never fight. They never go up against each other.
They had one fight, I believe, towards the end of season one, which was cool. Black Lightning got his butt kicked.
Yeah.
But, that's why it's working so well with Black Lightning and not with Flash. They're going up against Cicada almost every other episode.
And they're winning almost every time,
yes,
too. That's the other problem. I can't think of... Cicada has won a couple times early in an episode, but then Team Flash comes back and beats him. Or, like, yes, technically Cicada wins 51 times, right? But then
right,
he loses the last time. Ultimately, the end of the episode, he loses again. I just don't get it. It's weird because I don't think he's a bad villain, but he's become a joke to me because you know that he's going to lose. Anytime he pops up on screen, I'm like, you're going to lose. You've literally lost every time.
Now, I had a question for you because at the end of the episode, we learned more about Thawne's plan to stop Cicada. Nora must destroy the dagger. But is Nora letting him get away on purpose?
I don't think so. All of these scenes, they've all been caught. The characters in the show have been caught off guard when Cicada flies away. Inexplicably caught off guard every time.
Okay. But we know that Thawne wants Nora to destroy Cicada's dagger. But I still don't understand what Thawne is getting out of all this.
That theory would make sense if we had seen her do anything. We've never actually seen her prevent in any way. I can only think of one time she shows up. But she also shows up, and that's what keeps Barry from murdering Cicada.
Right.
And then that distracts Barry, and Cicada gets away. But if she doesn't show up, Barry pummels Cicada's face in. Any other time, I can't think of an instance where she prevents his capture.
Okay. I don't know. That's something I was throwing out there because I wanted it to make sense some way.
No, I agree. Well, that's the thing. I think it would make sense. I think it'd be really interesting if you saw her sabotaging it for some reason, but she's not. That's the thing. That's the dumbest thing, is that there's really no reason for him to continue to be able to get away. He just does it.
Yeah. Ugh. All right. I did like how Barry gave the same speech about time traveling to Nora that Jay gave him, using the mug as an example. I thought that was pretty cool. And then finally, the last thing I want to talk about in this episode was Sisko. He keeps trying to go on that date, but he's not being himself. And
okay, I want to say something because I was watching this and I had a not positive reaction to the girl that he was trying to date. And I wasn't sure if it was just me. And my girlfriend was like, she's terrible. On her own. I didn't ask her. Unprompted. She said that. And I was like, oh, thank God. It's not just me. And she made a comment that even I didn't quite notice. Ultimately, I know the point is that Sisko needs to be himself. And that's what she's attracted to. But she judges him immediately every time she sees him, except for the last time. And so my girlfriend was like, so what you're saying is it's all about what's on the surface, which is not the point, right? The point was that it was really who Sisko was on the inside. But she snap judgments him before he ever says a word. She has a negative reaction facially to him, except for the last one where all of a sudden, hi, you're here, you're late, that's fine. No, it's okay, because you're Sisko. You know what I'm saying? Like, I understand, Sisko's a jerk. Don't misunderstand me. Sisko is a jerk multiple times in those interactions, but she is not great. And she is very, I would say, borderline rude in a couple of them.
Yeah, you're right. You're right on that. I have to agree with you. Because she was making snap judgments every time, not even hardly giving him a chance.
He said some of the stuff he's like, I get it. I get he's not being himself. And I get that some of the stuff he does is really, really dumb. But a couple times, like, he shows up, it's just the clothes that he's wearing. He hasn't even said anything yet, and she's already off-put, and like, oh, I thought you would use your brain. And it was like, could you let the man talk first? I know he's going to say something stupid. Like, give him a second. He'll prove it, but you haven't even given him that chance yet.
There's some people
know.
That
I don't think it was. I don't think it was the point. My problem was I don't think that was intentional. I think you're supposed to entirely go that it. Sisko is supposed to be the problem in that equation. I have no problem with that, but it didn't feel like he was for some of them. And I like that's the problem. Like, I'm supposed to think Sisko's screwing up, but I'm kind of thinking he's just not dating a good person.
Yeah. All right. Well, at the very end of the episode, we see Sherlock is running his algorithm to unlock Nora's code. And I'm hoping it finally finishes next episode, which isn't going to be for several weeks.
You know what I thought was odd was that this episode seemed to completely refocus him on that mystery.
Instead of the girl from that distracted him last issue. Yeah.
They almost seemed out of order. I don't know. It was odd in that he was almost complete. That episode seemed to suggest that he was almost completely abandoning that to focus entirely on protecting her. And then this episode, it was none of that.
Yeah. So was that kind of a throwaway thing then, or?
I don't. That's the thing. I don't know. I noticed it during the episode. I was like, wait. You seem pretty focused on Nora. I didn't think you were supposed to be. I mean, I prefer you be. I'm not going to complain about it, but okay.
Hey, maybe her going back in time so much changed things.
I mean, yeah, possible.
We'll see if they explain it that way, or we'll see what happens next episode.
Just sloppy writing.
Yeah, could be that too. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Doom Patrol, Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. All right, Cletus, what a weird and great show this was. Definitely different from all the other superhero shows that we are seeing out there, but interesting, to say the least.
This was really good. I really liked this episode. It was, I remember, I frequently, when we talked about this show was coming on, I wasn't sure how they would do it. Because the comic is a very metafictional comic, and I wasn't sure how they would play with that. And this episode answered that a little bit, where we get a very self-aware narrator from Mr. Nobody is narrating it, also referencing the fact that it's a TV show, referencing that critics won't like it, referencing that this trope is really, you know, overblown and you as the audience member don't want to watch that, so why don't we do something else instead? All of that was just... It was so good. I was like, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly the kind of metafictional stuff I was hoping that they would incorporate into the show somehow.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool, too. All the characters they have in here are pretty interesting. I thought Brendan Fraser did great as playing Cliff Steele, Robot Man.
Yeah, he was awesome.
We didn't get to see too much of Tudyk in this, but I thought he did a great job of narrating.
I agree, and I'm very excited to see more of his character. Excited to get Cyborg. I was very surprised we didn't have Cyborg in this episode.
I was too, but I wasn't that disappointed that we didn't see him.
No, I mean, everything was so good. I didn't really feel like I missed him. It was just at the end, I was like, oh, wait, we haven't seen Cyborg. He's in the show.
But, you know, they took enough time with each of the characters to focus on their origins, because this is really an origin episode. We got to see the origin of Mr. Nobody, the origin of Rita Farr, a Lasty Woman, and I found her character pretty interesting, too. We got to see the origin of Larry Traynor, Negative Man. And I think whatever that alien blue thing that went into him when he was in space, I found that I find the mystery of that pretty interesting, because I don't know what his powers are.
I have to admit, I was surprised that they left that one not fully explained, right? Like, I mean, they go into heavy detail with Robot Man. I mean, basically the episode is really about Robot Man. He's clearly the main character.
Yes.
of the at least of this episode. I don't know if it will continue to be that way. I mean, they go into heavy detail with him. I feel like Elastigirl gets quite a bit with her. But then Negative Man, they only kind of get like half answers, I thought, with him.
I'm wondering if they're trying to keep that more mysterious for some reason.
Yeah.
You know, they'll reveal something more later in the season.
I'm excited to get more with all of these characters. I mean, I was pretty sure this show was going to be good based on the Titans episode we got, but it was even better than I could have expected. I mean, this was just a very engaging, weird, fun show.
Yeah, it was. And then we got that crazy Jane character who has 64 distinctive personalities, and each one has a different superpower. I think they're going to have fun with that character.
Yeah, and then that's another one similar to, we always talk about this with the different Harrison Wells characters, but as an actor, that's got to be fun to do too, because you get to do something different constantly.
Yeah, and not only that, she's going to have different superpowers we're going to see pop up over the series. That'll be interesting too.
The one thing that I am not surprised necessarily that we didn't get anything with was there was no reference whatsoever to Titans.
Yeah, there wasn't.
The events that took place in Titans.
I noticed that too, and they didn't even mention Beast Boy at all. So I don't know.
Do you think this is? I honestly thought that the explanation that is not said, but that the explanation is that this is a different universe of Doom Patrol.
That's what I was wondering too.
And that would explain why the Doctor is a different person.
Yeah,
that was the one thing that I still don't understand why they didn't just have Timothy Dalton play him in the Titans episode. He was so good in this. Not that the other guy was bad either. He was good too, but it was just, that was weird.
Yeah, I thought Timothy Dalton was better though.
No, I agree with you, and that's why I remember when we watched the Titans episode, I was like, why wasn't Timothy Dalton in this?
I don't know, but I liked him better than the other one, for sure.
He fits the show better, especially in terms of what... The other guy, I thought, worked for the almost, like, semi-antagonistic approach that Doctor had. Like, he was not quite a good guy in the Titans one.
Right.
And he's not definitely, like, a pure good guy in this one either. He's clearly lying to characters from time to time, but... It's Timothy Dalton. Like, he doesn't give off the same creepy vibe.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which is good. That's a good thing. I think that made the character... I think the show would have a weird tone if the same guy was playing him and was playing him in that same kind of untrustworthy manner that he was. That had made this episode feel weird.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
It's got to be the most recent Doom Patrol series that was put out. I know you weren't a huge fan of it.
No, I wasn't.
when we reviewed issue one of it. I really like it, though. Gerard Way, the writer, former the lead singer for My Chemical Romance, is the one that wrote that. And then he also – so he's had quite a week for himself because they had this kind of – I know he didn't create Doom Patrol, but he's the most recent writer. But then he also had his own Netflix series, his own comic, Umbrella Academy, just came out this week also. I feel like he's popping some champagne somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure he is. All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about Miracle Man by Tom King and Mitch Gerard because it is now out in stores. Because we had to come into the bookstore this weekend, so which Cletus found out because I sent him a text of a picture of it. So that's out now. If you guys have not read that, you can pick it up and read it because it's very good.
I second. I can't second that enough. I mean, please read that comic. It's so good.
All right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach our feedback line at 317-564-9133, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we've got Detective Comics, Justice League Dark, Supergirl, Superman, Flash, The Wonder Twins, Wonder Woman, and Supergirl and Doom Patrol. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone?
But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.